April 10th, 2024. We're continuing in Moreh Nevuchim in Chelek Gimal, Perek Lamed Aleph. Harambam has been in the midst of introducing his Ta'ameh HaMitzvot, introducing the necessity to explain and to look into the reasons for all the mitzvot, and then giving us some of the general and significant background, the principles that underlie what he describes as all the mitzvot. And this is really nearing the end of it here in Perek Lamed Aleph, a short Perek, in which I guess I could summarize it as he's just cynically speaking about those who believe that mitzvot shouldn't have reasons. Don't, because they shouldn't. So Harambam has a little bit of fun making fun of them over here. So here he writes, Yesh anashim shekashe lahem matan ta'am lemitzvah min hamitzvot. For some people, it's difficult to accept reasons and rationale for mitzvot. Rasui lahem biyoter. It's much more wanted, and their will is so much more, that they shouldn't understand any reason for the command or prohibition. There shouldn't be any. What draws them or what powers them to thinking and approaching mitzvot in such a fashion, hi mahala. It's a illness. Shehem hashim benafshotehem. She'en hem mesugalim ledaber alea, ve'en hem mitivim lehabi'ah. They have this illness which they think or aren't capable about speaking about, and they feel that they can't talk about it, and they furthermore aren't capable of articulating it. So Harambam has already made fun of these people, saying they have this ailment and illness that they can't speak about it and they can't articulate it. Ki hem sovrim she'ilu hayu hamitzvot ha'ele mo'ilot limsiut zot v'nitzdavinu bahen mishum kach ve'kach, because they believe that if mitzvot had a purpose and they did aid and assist in growing, well, we describe different angles, either the society at large or individuals in terms of their character or individuals in terms of their spiritual intellectual growth. As if that were the case, ki'ilu ba'u mitoch machshavto v'shikul da'ato shel ba'al sechil. In their mind, these mistaken people, that would be a marker, a telltale sign that the mitzvot came from a normal being who has a brain. After all, if I can explain the reason, it must be that a human being who uses reason brought forth these mitzvot. Aval imhen davar she'en muskelet lo mashma'ut kelal. If mitzvot and averot are something that have no rationale, there's no reason that you could attribute to them. Ve'en hem gormot to'elet. They don't achieve some purpose. Then they certainly came from God. Because if that were the case, that's something that the human brain can't wrap its head around. That's divine. That's godly.
In the eyes of these sorts of people who are sick in their minds, a human being is to a certain extent, listen to the irony, shalem yoter miyosro.
It would emerge that human beings are more complete than God. Why would that be the case? Well, before even reading it inside, you and I can come up with this. Well, human beings only do, decree, and determine based on logic and rationale. We're pragmatic. We say, if this helps us, we'll do it. If it hurts us, we won't do it. God, on the other hand, no. He decrees for no reason whatsoever. There's nothing that you could attribute to logic, rationale, and reason in God. It means that we're more shalem. Of course, more shalem with our mind, more shalem with our existence. Go ahead.
Not to be critical here, but just to be fair, you translated as sick.
Sick-minded people.
Isn't that weak-minded people more than sick?
Yes. He said earlier they have a holy, so that's why I went with that over here.
Halash
means weak-minded. You're right. I will tell you.
To be fair to them.
Yeah. Well, he said it earlier. No, but he said earlier. Give me a second. He says, Mahala, the second line from the top.
Yeah.
But you're right. Holshe Sechel means weak-minded individuals. Right? Shalem Yotem Yosua, they're human beings. Very good. Thank you, Sammy, for keeping me honest. Mipene Sheha Adam, who, for those who are transcribing my translations, make sure that you strike it. Mipene Sheha Adam, who, Asher Omer Ve'ose, Mashimevile Tachlit Kol Shehi. As I mentioned, in their minds, human beings do, human beings say that which brings to some objective. Hakel, God, and all says zot. No such logic. Ela mitzave alenu la'asot ma she'asiyato lo mo'ila lanu. He wastes our time. He tells us to do things that have nothing that assist us, that don't help us, that have no purpose. Ve'oser alenu ma she'asiyato lo mazika lanu. And likewise, he forbids from us realities, situations, foods, whatever you name it, that are not harmful to us. Hu na'ala me'od. Arambam says, just so you know, God is pretty high. He's pretty lofty. In other words, that logic, that approach of those weak-minded individuals, they're missing the whole point. They're turning God into a lowly creature and being, below human beings. Hadavar shoneh. The matter is very different. Kol hakavana. The entire purpose of mitzvot hi lehoil lanu is to aid, to assist us. As we already explained, his words, meaning God's words, this was earlier in Perek Kaf Zayin, because again, much of what we're reading right now is not per se a surprise. Again, he's repackaging it, he's bringing it home even further, but he's repeated this to us quite a lot over the course of the last several chapters. The Pasuk describes that the mitzvot are for goodness, for us, and they give us life, kayom hazeh. That's mitzvot. In what way? Are they good for us and give us life? Unless they have some practical, pragmatic side to them. Ve'amar. And likewise, and Harambam picks up on this, it's a derashah of the Hachamim, but he brings it home. Ashe yishme'un, you see the Pesukim at the beginning of Sefer Devarim say that mi goy gadol, you want to know how great you are as a nation, because the other nations will and do hear about you, and they hear about all the mitzvot that you have. That's what it says. And they are astounded by the wisdom that you have. Instead of reading that as two separate things, you have mitzvot and you have wisdom, says Harambam, well, let's read them together. The mitzvot is the wisdom. And it says, Ashe yishmun et kol ha-chokim ha-ele. They hear about all these chokim. And for Harambam, chok means something that's very difficult to even discern the reason. So they hear even about the chokim, ve'ameru, and they exclaim, Rak am hacham ve'navon ha-goy ha-gadol hazeh. So put yourself for a moment in the shoes, lo aleinu, of an idolater. It doesn't seem so wise that those monotheists have these laws which have no logic, reason, or rationale. There's no wisdom in that. The wisdom that the non-Jews can perceive in us is that the mitzvot, even the chokim, have some objective. If it was just that we listen to God, well, then surrounding nations would not be astounded by that. That wouldn't be impressive to them. Maybe dedication, but the pasuk says they're going to say that we're am hacham v'navon. Hare she'amar b'mfurash she'afilu ha'chokim. And again, for Harambam, chukim are more difficult to discern the reason. They don't have no reason. But even the chukim kulam morim be'ene kol ha'umot shem be'chokma utvuna. Even performance, acceptance, and adherence to the chukim shows wisdom and brings forth in us a certain modicum of wisdom. Ilu haya davar she'en yodeim et ta'amo ve'eno mov'il le'to'elet ve'eno do'che nezek. If mitzvot had no reason, or we didn't know it at all, or it doesn't keep away harm, as we've discussed, madua ye'amer ahla ma'amin o ha'oseh oto shu hacham ve'navon ve'rav erich. Why would they say about a person who does it here, does accept, does know the mitzvot, that he's wise and that he's brilliant? Ve'orer pili'a ba'umot. And it would be an astounding, a confounding reality for the nations. Why would it be so? Ela inyan beli safek kmo chesiano. Rather, the matter without a doubt is, as we said, shekol mitzvah mishesh me'ot u'shlosh esre mitzvot ele ba'a o latete anechona Or the hasir de'a pesula, the purpose of mitzvot is either to remove a wrongful approach, avodah zarah, generally speaking, or to inject a proper one. Or alternatively, if it's not that lofty, it's not to change our minds, well then it's something a little bit lower, as Harambam gave us hierarchy already. Latet mishpat tzedek, it's to build societal governance. Or lehasir oshek, or lehanech midat tova, or to get rid of evil to others, or to teach us proper character traits, or lazir mipnei midat geruah, or to warn us about wrong character traits. Hakol talui bishlosha divarim, as we've mentioned more than once, everything with regards to mitzvot, chukei haTorah, comes down to three things: deot, midot, maaseh hanagat medina. Deot meaning, literally over here, not like in his Mishneh Torah, the mind, the spiritual connection, perhaps. Midot, character traits of individuals. Maaseh hanagat medina means the societal governing system. Ma shehayav she'en anu monim et ha'amirot, hu she'amirot asher ha'Torah zireza le'omran o asran otan, halkan miklal ha'maasim ha'medinim, halkan la'haknayat deot, halkan la'haknayat midot. Says Harambam, he says, furthermore, you should know that the amirot, what are the amirot? Well, there's things that you must say, and there are things that you may not say. What are the things you must say? The notes say, for example, vidui bikurim, the pesukim at the beginning of Parashat Kitabo. We're going to say it very soon. Aramiya ovedavi. Vidui ma'aser is there as well, different declaration. Well, the things you need to say. Then there are things you're not allowed to say. Kigon, lotisa, nasiba amecha lotaor, not using God's name in vain, not cursing important individuals. What is their general structure and purpose? Why are we not going to address them? Says Harambam, they're quite clear. The purpose of them is they bring ma'asim midiniyim, they bring forth civil actions. Chalkan laknayat deot, some of them are to change our mind. Chalkan laknayat midot, some of them are to change our character traits. Lachen hitztamtzamnu kan bishlosha inyanim ele benitinatam lechol mitzvah min ha-mitzvot. And it's for that reason, says Harambam, in conclusion, we have three reasons that underlie pretty much all mitzvot. Again, societal governance. Secondly, midot, character traits within individuals. And then, what he described as the real objective, changing mind. Okay, changing mind approaches, understanding divinity, seeing the godly, etc. Okay, that being the case, that's this Perek. Again, in my mind, not so new with regards to what we know already about our introduction to the mitzvot, but brings home the point in case you didn't hear it until now. And I want to use it as a springboard to addressing a famous issue of Hara in the Moreh with regards to the mitzvot. Brings home the point that all mitzvot, says Harambam, have reason, rationale, and logic. They all do. He told us at the beginning, maybe I won't be able to tell you all the pratim, and he kind of tells you many of them. He's telling us again and again, they all have that. We jump ahead now to one of the very famous issues, quote-unquote, in just the internal thought of Harambam. It's not per se an issue in the Moreh, you'll understand why in a moment. It's an issue in the general structure of Harambam's thought as he passed it down to us in all of his writings. So that was our introduction, Perek Lamed Aleph.
The view of this Perek is basically that those who think that giving reasons to mitzvot bring mitzvot down to a human level and shouldn't be thinking that, he's saying it's the opposite. It's,
correct.
Needs to bring, it's, don't think that the average human thought is going to come to all these conclusions. This is meant to instruct them.
Right. It reminds me of what Hurdle Towel Alav HaShalom told me once. He said, seems to me, Harari, that you think that when people don't understand you, you're more impressive. I got news. When people do understand you, that's when you're most impressive. Yes. So to summarize that Perek, then the new addition then of Harambam as he's making fun of it is significant. Don't be led astray by thinking that, well, if mitzvot have reason, then it must be human given. Quite the opposite. If it was human given, it might be flawed. Okay, well, I'll address that. But by definition, if it's divine, it's going to have purpose and reason. You're going to be feeling that. That's what makes it more perfect. Again, how do I then distinguish between godly and human-like? That you'll have to take it all in totality and say, well, something's right here. The system just seems to work if you want that to be your convincing feature. But yes, you're right. That's what he introduced over here that we hadn't stated earlier. All right, well, now I jump us ahead to Perek Mem Chet. So we're really at this point that we went from Perek Lamed Aleph, 17 chapters ahead for tonight. And over here, Harambam's in the midst of, and again, he clusters many of the mitzvot together, and he's in his 13th cluster of mitzvot, and these are the forbidden foods and the laws of shechita, he says, of slaughtering, and the laws of nidarim and nizirut, or vows and becoming a nazir and things of that sort. But I pick us up in the middle of where he's talking, not about basar b'chalav, not about the general instructions of kashrut, all important issues, but rather, if you'll take a look on page 635, the second paragraph, the third line, Hatzivui Lishchot. So Harambam now is talking about the obligation to slaughter. And in this paragraph, over the course of the next several paragraphs, he draws a common thread. There's a common thread to all these forbidden actions or food production from the Torah. That's what I want to talk about now, says Harambam. I talked about forbidden foods. I talked about that's what I want to talk about. And there's a common thread. They all have the same underlying fundamental. Hasivui lishchot ba'alei chayim hechrechi. This one, I imagine if I polled the audience, this audience, just like any other Jewish audience, maybe even a non-Jewish audience, and I said, what is, if you had to give a reason, the purpose for shechita, you'd say, in order to minimize the pain to the animal. If you were really philosophical, you'd say that influences me as a person, gives me certain sensitivity. All beautiful, effectively what he writes. Hatzivui lishchot ba'alei chayim hechrechi. It's a necessary one. Ki ha-mazon ha-tivi'i la-adam hu-me-ha-gar'inim ha-tsumchim ha-aretz hu-me-bisar ba'alei chayim. The food that human beings, if they're going to keep healthy, or the natural food is from seeds that grow in the ground, or with anything that grows from the ground, u'mibisar ba'alei chayim, or from the flesh of animals. V'habasar me'oleh bi'yoter hu zeh she'utar lanu le'ochlo. And the best type of flesh and meat that you can eat is the type, you made it, is the type that's permitted for us to eat. You want to pick up on the second of those pages. And you're in the right time. Davar zeh, I even introduced by saying you're not going to be happy, so it's a shame that it's good that you're here. Davar zeh lo ne'ilam mishum rofe, says Harambam. Every doctor knows that the types of meats that the Torah permits for us to eat are the healthy ones. Okay, that's a controversial line. Why is it controversial? Because some made the claim, what about the non-Jews? The non-Jews seem to be eating pork, and many of them live long lives. I don't want to address that now. This is Adam Baum's claim. He has to address it, but it doesn't. And since keeping healthy, part of it, he writes, is eating meat, and you need to necessarily kill animals, the purpose of the Torah in instructing shechita is that you give the easiest, swiftest death to that animal. And it's forbidden to torture it with a forbidden slaughtering. Linhor means to not slaughter it, I don't know, to shoot it, to bang its head in, whatever, to puncture it, or to take ever min ha'chai. Those are ways in which, to say it in a sentence, you're acting cruelly. You are causing pain. That in turn is forbidden for that reason. So too, you could have imagined, I'm just saying parenthetically, I could have imagined, without knowing anything about Avodah Zarah, that this next one was an Avodah Zarah thing. Apparently it's not, or at least in Harambam's eyes it's not. That you're not allowed to slaughter the animal and its child in the same day. So as Harambam, I'll tell you the reason for it. It has to do with mercy again. Nothing to do with Avodah Zarah. Again, he has plenty of Avodah Zarah stuff. Betur siyag v'harchaka pen yishachet havalad. The purpose and the reason why the Torah says you can't slaughter both in the same day, it's not about slaughtering them in the same day. It's that if you're going to slaughter them the same day, you're going to bring them into the same room to slaughter them. You're going to end up slaughtering the child in front of the mother. That's just the reality. I mean, it's just the normal situation. So it's like a gezerah of the Torah. Rabbis weren't the ones who invented building gates. God was. I mean, we have one coming up on Pesach. The Yisur really is about eating chametz. God, according to many interpretations, tells... He certainly tells us you can't have it in your possession either. According to many interpretations, that's a geder as well. So for Harambam, otovet beno lo tishhatu biyom echad is as well a gezerah. Davar sheyesh bo tzar gadol me'od lebaal chayim. So as Harambam, if you know about the psychology of animals, you'll know that it pains the mother animal seeing its baby animal or its child being slaughtered at the same time. Shekin en hevdel ben tzar ha'adam v'tzar she'ar ba'alei chayim. We're getting there. That's where the fireworks begin. Mipeneh she'ahavat ha'em layeldah v'ga'agueya elav enam nimshachim ahar ha'sekil ela ahar pe'olat ha'koh ha'medameh ha'nimtza berov ba'alei chayim kemo she'u nimtza ba'adam. Says Harambam, the pain that an animal feels or experiences when its babies or a child is getting killed in front of it is not something that needs a higher level intellect. It's what we call koach hamidameh. It's a certain lower level understanding and appreciation of reality. And even animals have that, in the same way human beings do. It kind of teaches you a little bit about what Harambam, as well as Aristotle, think about emotions in general. Even animals have it. Okay. Din ze miyuhad l'shor v'seh. Why does the Torah seem to say this specifically by oxen and by sheep? Mipene shehem amutarim lanu ba'achila miben ha'behemot ha'bayit. Because amongst the domestic animals, those are the ones, generally speaking, that are permitted to eat. Not a horse and not a... I don't know, what else do we have in home? A dog, there you are, thank you, or a cat. V'shem mikubal le'ochlam larov, and it's generally speaking eaten. Ubahem makira ha'em mihavalad, and they have a big enough brain to recognize who their child is. Okay, so the first two that we discussed over here, very clearly, if we were to, it's not his words per se, my words, attribute, give a heading, midat rahamim. The Torah is looking to instill within us a certain character trait known as mercy. Because of the animal per se, hard to claim that.
He said it's healthy to eat
me. That's what he wrote. He said every doctor knows that. So that's what we have. Now he gets the last one on our list, the one AB already referred to. Ze gam ta'am. Now, there's other issues with it, AB. Other issues are the lust. That's the ta'ava. That's the ta'ava. He means from a health. You're going to say that's also unhealthy. I don't know. Yeah. He talks about that separately. He does talk about that separately, and that's where you get into the whole conversation of vegetarianism. That's for sure true. But over here, he's not talking about from the ta'ava perspective. He's talking about in terms of what it does to you. Zegam ta'hatam. That's what he writes about it. He writes about its permissibility, but. Yeah. Okay, that's an interesting point, because you'd think that he would call that unhealthy. Right. All right, interesting thing to explore. Ze gam hatam l'shiluah hakan. That's also the reason for sending away a mother bird. Mipene, pasuk at the end of parashat Kitese, sheberov hamikrim habetzim shenidgiru vehagozalim hatzirichim laem enam reuyim la'achila. So that's Arambam, you should know. Generally speaking, the eggs that are there and the chicks that maybe have already hatched, you're not really eating them. You're sending away the money. You're not really eating them. They're not ra'ui la'achila. They're just not the state of where they are. The chicks are probably really small. And the eggs, I guess, are just at a stage that they're inedible or they're not... You're not eating fertilized eggs. There you are. Thank you. We needed a...
The ka'asher... The ka'asher is that they have to be fertilized in order to perform the mitzvah.
No.
It's like a certain period of time that you're allowed to
really
take the egg.
Sure. So you're making his point. Hang tight.
Hold on. So everybody understands. Fertilization happens before the egg...
He just means a specific time. Okay.
Yeah, I don't mean.
So once it's in a nest, it's either fertilized or it's not fertilized.
Good. The point, in short, is I don't need it. I mean, I'd love it. Teach me the biology afterwards. The point, in short, is whether he's right or not, also, has no bearing to me in the moment. His philosophy is more significant than his reality for us at this moment, at least in my mind. His claim is it's inedible, or at the very least, it's not tasty. And then you're going to send away the mother bird. It'll flee on its own. His claim, says Harambam, is it now no longer minds when it comes back and its babies are gone. That's not an issue. Okay, again, I don't. I leave that to him, and then I'm gonna have some zoologist who's gonna call me and say it's not true. Okay, it's not true, but that's his claim. I want to work within his claims. I don't want to attack him from the outside. Uberov hamikrim ze asui lehavi la'azivat hakol. That's a fascinating thing. People forget to quote this part of Harambam, and he says, and what you'll probably end up doing is you're gonna send away the mother bird. You're gonna go to the nest. You're gonna look and you're like, oh, I don't actually want this stuff. Which means that this is all a gimmick of God to get you away from being a cruel hunter. That's the purpose. You're not going to want to eat that. So you're going to send away the mother bird. You're going to look in the nest and be like, oh, I don't actually want this sort of stuff. Shaharei larov en hanilkach ra'ui la'achila. V'im ha'Torah mitchashevet b'yisurim nafshim ele b'behemot u'ba'ofot. And the next stage is, now that I gave you these three examples, if the Torah is so careful about having mercy on animals and birds, al ahat kama v'chama b'pirtei min ha'adam b'chlaluto, all the more so to every human being. V'al titan kenegdi. Don't now make a claim against me. B'divrehem zal. The words of the rabbis in the Mishnah and Masechet Berachot in the fifth chapter. What does it say over there? Ha'omer. If a person says, Al kan sipor yagi'u rahamecha. Famous words of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, if someone says, God, your mercy should reach or should be as when it reaches the nest of a bird. Yeah. What do we do to him? Mishatikinoto. We shut him up. We say, Scott, be quiet. Why not? The Mishnah over there tells the reason why. The Mishnah over there, and I believe he's going to quote it in the bottom. He doesn't. The Mishnah over there says, "Mipene she'ose midotav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu rahmanim," because you've established the attribute or the mitzvot of God as merciful. Ve'enan ela gezerot. All they are gezerot. They're just gates. That sounds like the absolute opposite of everything we just read. We just read reasons. Firstly, the introduction to the class, Perek Lamed Aleph, reiterating all mitzvot have reasons. Perek Kavav, Perek Kav Zayin, all mitzvot have reasons. All mitzvot have reasons. All mitzvot have reasons. Okay, now you're in the midst of giving me the reasons. You got caught, Harambam. You just gave us a reason for one that the rabbis explicitly say. Not only does it not have a reason, we tell a person who's talking about its reason, which is the same reason you just said, to shut up. Oh, don't get banged up. Why not? Mipene shezot ahat mishtei hadeot asher hizkanu. This is one of the two mistaken approaches that we talked about already in Perek Kavav. We talked about the people who make mistakes, think mitzvot don't have reasons, think we can't understand the reasons of mitzvot. That's this Mishnah. This is a lesson in pedagogy or in methodology. Harambam is telling you right now, you open up Mishnayot, don't assume that everything you read is right. That's a crazy statement. Okay, he can say it. Of course, for Avi Harari, this opens up the opposite direction question. Right. How come every time you took so many other ones that banged you up so seriously, you had to twist over backwards, why don't you just do this? Notably, and I don't want to do this right now, but I do want to remind you, remember, I did mention it at the time briefly, remember when we talked about how he got all banged up over the fact about details of mitzvot, they don't have reasons, there's a midrash that says so, why don't you just say, that midrash is one of these two approaches. He clearly wanted, and we set forth a direction on that, he wanted to go there. He had an angle. Okay, regardless, that's what he writes. Mipnei shezot ahat mishtei hadeot asher hizkarnu kelomar da'atam shel hasovrim shein tam la'Torah zulat harason gereda ve'ilu anu holchim ve'ekbot ha'de'a asheniyah. You should know as well the de'a asheniyah, which he mentioned over there, he said pretty much everyone who's Chachmei HaTorah accepts. So he effectively now said, Eistam Mishnah, there's no two opinions in this Mishnah, is against what Rov Chachmei HaTorah believe, like all the true scholars and Torah people believe. All right, that's in and of itself. It's a jarring statement. In and of itself, you read this and you're like, wow, Harambam had a lot of power, a lot of goal, and he's very certain with himself. Go ahead.
We assume that there's a discussion in the Gemara.
There is not.
There is no discussion.
No dissenting view. It's a stam mishnah about which there's no mahloket. Justin Jackson, crazy thing. I'm with you. I'll go a step further. This page. This page is from this book. It's called Mishneh Torah. It's written by, let me just check the front of it. It says over here, Huayad Hazaka Leharambam. I think it's the same author. Right. So now, here, it's Perek Tet of Hilchot Tefillah, Halakha Zayin, the very bottom of the page, in the block letters, right? So some four lines before the end of the block letter lines. Kol Ha'omer B'tahanunim. Any person who says in his tahanun, because that's when they used to inject this, mi shirichem al kan sipur, shelo yikachem al abanim. Any person who says, he who had mercy on the nest of birds, not to take the children. O shelo yishhato tovet bino biyom echad. How do you like that? Or he throws in this one as well. Yirachem aleno, that being should have mercy on us, v'kayotze be'inyanz, and anything similar, mishatekinoto. You keep him quiet. Okay, so it's not per se a contradiction just yet. Maybe there's another reason why you keep him quiet. I know what the Mishnah told. What does he say? Let me just read the next words. Mipene shemitzvot elu gezerat hakatuben. He says, because these mitzvot are just the decree of the pasuk. Ve'enam rahamim. And they're not for mercy. Shi'ulu ayu mipnei rahamim lo hitil lanu shechita kol ikar. Because if they were for mercy, we wouldn't be able to slaughter at all. By the way, no concessions over here. And, you know, a faulty logic to make the claim of the rabbis in the Mishnah. So there is, very clearly, among many, many, many others, but this is a notorious one for the reason that I think is clear, a contradiction between Mishneh Torah and Moreh Nevuchim. Now, when you come to most of the many contradictions, most of them you're going to find in the context of these 20 chapters of Ta'ameh HaMitzvot. What else is he talking about in Mishneh Torah? Go ahead.
But Mishneh is different audience, Mishneh Torah and that.
Hang tight. Give me 1 second. I'll come to you. I'll introduce your approach first. That being the case, so we've come to a startling contradiction. Now, to say that other mitzvot, he gives one reason and the Moreh gives another reason, Mishneh Torah, all right, we give a reason here. That's okay. He could change his mind. He could have different perspectives. Shivim panim la Torah. He's not 100% sure of the reason. No problem. This one is pretty critical. This one he spent 5+ chapters reminding us every mitzvah has a reason. This one, he told us in Moreh Nevuchim, don't pay attention to that statement because it's one of the mistaken groups. And now, here in his Mishneh Torah, he cites it. That's somewhat startling. Go ahead.
So really, exactly 3 for 3. Is what we just read.
What did it start with? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Says Sammy, it's so much better than I made it. He has Kan Sipor, which is the Lashon of Mishnah. It's as well he writes the Otovet Beno, and he writes as well, it's Shechita. Right, great point. Great point. So first things first is the A.B. Mallow approach. The A.B. Mallow approach... It makes the following claim. I'm gonna go before the A.B. Mallow approach. There's the more extreme approach. The really extreme approach claims that one of these two books is the true Rambam, and the other one is for polemics. Either philosophical to deal with the Muslims who are infiltrating and messing people up. Let me give you the counter to them. Not that we need that, just within their system, I'll throw this at them. Or the halakha is, and halakha is the true one, or the Mishneh Torah is the true one, or the opposite. He was a philosopher at his core. No traditional Jew was going to accept his word unless he constructed a book on halakha beforehand. He sold you, he's a traditionalist, then he could get you in. Those are two, and they're historically these, I have many books on this, but one of my most famous book on this is written by a Levinger, I think is his name, Harambam Ke Posek U Ke Filosof. That's the name of the book. Right? He's a Posek and he's a philosopher.
He's also
Which
a
one is he? It's also a but these two are somewhat of a dichotomy. You know, is he a Posek or is he a philosoph? Usually they you could square them. Does he square them? The other approach you could have is...
I was just going to say, Mishneh Torah, if I'm not mistaken, is him not trying to come up with new material, him just taking...
So you hold that for 1 second as well.
Which did he write first, the Mishneh Torah?
Yes. Okay. But you hold that for a second. Okay. So the next approach before that, and I'm going to sharpen that in my way. Or not sharpen, I'm going to twist it my way. Sharpen's not fair. It means you weren't sharp. I'm going to twist it my way. And the next approach is, these are, he means them both. They're written for different audiences. Shivim Panim La Torah, He was uncertain per se. This may have been the real one in Moreh Nevuchim. He doesn't think this is wrong per se. He's writing for the people who think like that. He did very clearly in Moreh Nevuchim say, I disagree with such an approach. But maybe in Mishneh Torah he's saying, I think there is some credibility to it. It's hard. It's hard over here specifically. Sometimes you could pull that off. Over here it's very hard because he told us in the Moreh Nevuchim, like, you're really wrong if you think that way. So you're writing it for a different audience, but like you're feeding them something that's really wrong. It reminds me of the last time I said that you can't really do this when we talked about this in Ayin Tahat Ayin. In Mishneh Torah he says, you can't translate it literally. In Moreh Nevuchim he says, don't pay attention to that. Well, that one's very hard because it was the opposite direction. In Mishneh Torah, he says, it's heretical if you interpret it literally. And Moreh Nevuchim says, by the way, it's literal. The rabbis have their thing. You know, okay, we had to deal with it at the time and we dealt with it in our own way. But over there as well, you couldn't really pull that. So what I would like to suggest, it'll take just a few minutes, and this is the part that I was saying, maybe you're not going to be too excited about, but so it goes, is that Harambam's objective in Mishneh Torah specifically is to present halacha. And when we talk about halacha, and this comes into many conversations, classes, etc., that I've had over the course of time, halacha is not per se built on the fundamentals or the foundations of clean, clear logic, philosophy, a trajectory that you could predict, one that you could trace backward and say, I understand why this got to there. It's messy. Why is it messy? I'll just give you a few examples very brief. It's messy because it's a human development. Halakha has a certain kernel, a certain spark of, well, it started with and it does represent Torah law. However, over the course of time, with the advancement of human beings, of Jews who are explaining it, there is messiness over the course of time, to the extent that, I know you're going to hate it, because we've had this conversation in so many other contexts that you did. So, I say it even on Deoraitas, even on the expression of the Deoraita. It can't go against the Deoraita, but the interpretation of the Deoraita, to the extent that, you know, the craziest, the one that disturbs people the most when I say it like this, is that we accept on a Deoraita level, halachot, which, if you trace it backwards, not all the time, but you'll find this from time to time, was a scribal error. And we're 99% sure it was a scribal error. And we still accept it as either rabbinically, but oftentimes biblically forbidden. I have dozens of these sorts of things.
You did it on Shavuot night a number of years ago. With
dairy and fish, but that's a rabbinic one.
No, with the eggs that are coming from the bugs and they just suddenly...
Spontaneous generation. Yeah, so give me a second. I'll talk about that one in this context as well. There you're going to be talking about a De'oraita on Shabbat. Great example. Okay, so in other words, one far-off example that I've given now, scribal errors, which I'm not uncomfortable tracing the history and then saying, of course that's what we do. Well, what do you mean, of course that's what you do? It's ridiculous. Not ridiculous. Because I accept a national, communal development over the course of time. Does that mean it can't be changed? It doesn't mean that we're going to be the funny nation in the eyes of the world. First and foremost, if it's diametrically opposed to biblical law, it won't exist. You can't pull that off. A nation, we won't accept it. It'll be knocked out. It's got to have some angle of acceptance over here. It's got to have some angle of making sense. Secondly, it could be changed. It's hard. Takes a lot of time. Another example before I get to spontaneous generation is the Gemara at the beginning of Masechet Beitzah. The Gemara says, why do we keep in Chutz La'aretz 2 days Yom Tov? So the Gemara says, Min ha'gavoteinu bi'adeinu. What do you mean? The Gemara says, but we know which day is Yom Tov. The rabbis of the Gemara, Min ha'gavoteinu bi'adeinu. What are you talking about? Why are you doing it? This is what we do. Does that mean that it couldn't or can't be reversed? It doesn't mean that per se. It does mean there's a lot of strength to the practice that's put in place, which means to say, I'm writing my philosophy book and I'm writing, you should be keeping one day because, I'm not philosophy, but I'm giving my rationale book, because X, Y, and Z, I'm writing my halakha book and I'm writing, you should be keeping 2 days, and I'll make up those reasons that the Gemara gives and accept them as binding. The spontaneous generation, very comfortable. I actually spoke about this. with Rabbi Shammah in the class at the time. I invited him. I wanted to make clear this was not a controversial class. Rabbi Shammah is quoted, there's a longer story to it, by Chacham Avadia Yosef in a letter that he wrote to someone in Shaar Etzion, I think Rabbi Kassin, Rabbi Jacob Kassin, about Rabbi Shammah talking about and responding to a student that when the Gemara says in two places that you can kill kinim, lice on Shabbat, the reason you're allowed to do so, the Gemara says, is because lice spontaneously generate. What does that mean? They don't reproduce. They come from sweat. I would be in a lot of trouble. I'd have lice all over the place if that was the reality. So that's what the Gemara says. Now, that was, and even Aristotle accepted that. That's old science. That's old scientific beliefs. Clearly not the reality. We know that with 100 billion% certainty today. No such thing in spontaneous generation. So what should that mean in terms of killing lice on Shabbat? Rabbi Shammah responded to his student, you have to be mahmir, you cannot kill it. And without getting into the history, it became a controversial thing that Rabbi Ovadia Yosef had to weigh in on. P.S., Rabbi Shammah pointed out to me, and he was so right, I showed him afterwards. He said, what I said then, maybe it was controversial 50 years ago, he said, in the current climate, I was surprised even with in touch with, he said, in the current, not because he's not, I just didn't think he gets his hands dirty with this any longer. He said, in the current climate of Talmud or of rabbinic thought, that's not even controversial. He's 100% right. Chacham Avadia Yosef quotes, it's a little different than that angle, but he says, Rav Al-Yashif said that you can't kill them on Shabbat. One second. Now, he doesn't go as far as, in your face saying because the rabbis were wrong. He says, if the rabbis may have been wrong about science, yesh lachmir. Yesh lachmir, but the rabbi said reality. So the world has come a long way since that time. So what I suggested then, I guess on Shavuot as well, and I'm sure on many other occasions, is that there's somewhat of an in-between approach. Subsequently, it's been shown to me that Rabbi Herzog writes this. Most recently, I think Rabbi Slifkin has this sort of approach as well. And the approach goes like this. Even if we accept, as we should, Rabbi Avraham ben Harambam writes so, that the rabbi's science was, at the time, top of the world, they knew it, but today we've proven differently, the halakha might or oftentimes won't change, because the halakha is that communal national development. I therefore bring you to the words in Mishneh Torah versus Moreh Nevuchim. Now, if you want to talk about which one's, quote, more authentic, it's hard to define authentic. Authentic in terms of his belief and his understanding of Torah Shebichtav, I'm holding it. It's Moreh Nevuchim. There's no questioning that. In authentic in terms of practice, I don't think he's faking us out when he wrote this. I don't think he's looking to appease the audience when he wrote Mishneh Torah. He's talking about a different issue. He's talking about practice. So you'd say to him, wait a second, Harambam, I really believe it. I mean, I remember the first time I was asked this, maybe 12 years ago, someone came from teaching a class in Shaar Etzion, and to Yeshiva Flavish, and said, have you ever thought about this? I said, yes, let me tell you my approach. No, terrible answer, or whatever. They hated him. But this is really what I believe. I really believe that if you asked him about his Mishneh Torah, he'd say, absolutely, Mishneh Tekinoto. Why? Because the Mishnah said that you're making his mitzvot into Rahamanim. But don't you believe that? Of course I do. But wait, but the Mishnah says then that's what we've accepted. Now again, if I put into motion a revolution to change that, maybe that could change. Maybe. But it hasn't. So Harambam listed in his Mishneh Torah. I will just conclude with one last tantalizing thought in this context, at least tantalizing for me. It makes us wonder then, and we haven't read any of it, we haven't read the detractors, we haven't dealt with this at all, although it's come up at different occasions. The last stage of this type of thought, or others, is to talk about korbanot. Harambam in his Moreh Nevuchim makes very clear, as he does in one other place, that the purpose for Korbanot is a concession. It's a concession to a nation who was ensconced with a mindset, a culture of Avodah Zarah. That's what you know, that's your way of worship. Go for it, but do it my way. Channel it in my direction. Not excited about this, but it's okay. Okay, Rambam Nachmani, many of the classical commentators, medieval rabbis disagreed. But that's Harambam's approach. You'd imagine then you'll have no mention of Korbanot in the future. He can mention it all he likes in Mishneh Torah, but he's not going to say it's relevant in the future. He knows the Gemara, which says that most Avodah Zarah has been wiped out, that the challenge, I know I said that last week, he got annoyed by it, that the challenge of Avodah Zarah will in Yemot HaMashiach cease to exist. Well, if that's the case, how come he writes in Hilchot Melachim that Melech HaMashiach will come, eradicate Amalek, and build the Beit HaMikdash, and restore the sacrifice of Korbanot? I can't be. unless the beginning to such an approach as well is coupling what we discussed last week about a, you know, about a new definition to mitzvot. In other words, the mitzvah remains the same. There we're dealing with a biblical mitzvah. It's not really a rabbinic statement per se. The mitzvah stays the same and it just gets a new clothing. But at the same time, you can and perhaps should accept in that context the notion that a mitzvah, even if its origin, so to speak, again, over here I'm shifting a little bit. I'm taking it from the application of mitzvot and the way we determined it to, and the rabbinical interpretation of it, to the biblical command. Even if the biblical command with regards to korbanot is, so to speak, no longer relevant, that doesn't mean that its force, because of national practice and acceptance, will dissipate as well. But then it's silly. Then the nations will say, you're a stupid nation, quoting from Harambam's claim earlier, unless you come up with a new reason and rationale, where I link you into last week's class. Go ahead,
Abe. He goes the further. He says, like you said before, with your constant, he goes further to tell a guy not to pray. That's the only way, meaning...
Right.
No, clearly...
Right. I agree with you. He goes further. He's even prayer. I'm just saying, again, my issue is most specific. Right. Agreed. My issue is... And today's day... By the way, you haven't been in the day schools recently. If we said meditate instead of prayer, people would be very excited today. And it's, oh, that's the way I'll connect. But not the point. In short, then, to just summarize the class, then, piecing it all together, we began with Perek Lamed Aleph here in Chelek Gimel of Morei Nebuchim, where Harambam repeats the point, but sharpens it further, he himself for us, that all mitzvot have reasons. Attributing reasons does not take away from the divinity, and if anything, magnifies the divine nature of the mitzvot. We then talked about these three statements, the Otovet Beno, the Shechita, and the Shiluah Hakan, where Harambam says they're a merciful gesture or bringing us to mercy. And we asked, he asked on himself, what about the Mishnah and Berachot? Don't pay attention to that. That's from the wrong approach. We said, but wait a second. He himself in the Mishneh Torah codifies that, mentions it. We suggested in a sentence, philosophy and halakha are two different mindsets. What do you mean? Which one's true? They're both true, but different approaches to it. Philosophy, we're touching on what is the principle. What is, quote-unquote, the true notion and reason? Halakha is, what is the practice? I'll define for you from time to time how we got to that practice, but that doesn't need to be, so to speak, the true defining reality. We didn't do it in this round of the Moreh, but there's in another round, I pointed out as well, and just I'll just mention this as a conclusion, we actually mentioned in an earlier class, if you recall, that Harambam does two very different things between Moreh Nebuchim and Mishneh Torah, which really speaks to this difference. In Moreh Nebuchim, for all intents and purposes, it's about the process here. He leaves things in the middle of sentences. He realizes you're not going to grasp everything right away. He puts contradictions and he tells you he does it on purpose. He wants you working through this. He wants to put you on a path in which you're developing your mind. It's all about the process when you get to Moreh Nebuchim. Mishneh Torah, cut out all that shakla v'tarya from the Gemara, all the back and forth. Take all the process out. Let me tell you the bottom line. I'll tell you how they got there from time to time. But really, halakha in principle, not the philosophy of halakha, halakha in principle is, well, what are you doing? What you're doing is determined by what the rabbis determined. We are interpreting the Torah as such, and we accepted it that way. And that, in turn, is perhaps the resolution, among many others which are suggested, but this is my humble one, with regards to this contradiction. It can and would work with many others, but this one, I think, is the most glaring and famous one, whereas in Moreh Nebuchim, he says, of course, it's midat rachamim. In Mishneh Torah, he says it's not. You're paying attention to the wrong part of Mishneh Torah. It's not midat rachamim. Therefore, you must quiet him. That's the critical line. The quieting him is the critical line. He happens to tell you what the rabbis suggest for that reason, for the reason for that action. But fundamentally, it's the action which is what bears mention, and in turn is the reason why it makes its way into, truthfully and honestly, Mishneh Torah. Baruch Adonai Olam. Amen. Amen.